Jackson, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, I'm happy to say, is returning for an engagement to discuss Sarah Palin in Alaska. He is the editor of the Progressive Alaska blog and a very versatile fellow. His name is Phil Munger. Phil, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Joe.
Hey, last time we spoke, you had to go to see some meeting about the attorneys from that have been sent up by the Bush and McCain clique to take over, Alaska, running legal interference to put down Troopergate. What came of that?
Oh, well, a lot of organizing. Basically, group formed that held another, I guess you could call it a rally over the weekend, at which petitions were signed, totaling well over 1,000 signatures. There were probably 15 people at the rally at the Delaney Park Strip in the middle of Anchorage. And yesterday, a group of us presented this petition to the Department of Law and Bill McAllister, Governor Palin's communications director or press secretary, took it on behalf of the Department of Law. We would have rather somebody from the Department of Law itself had taken it, but they preferred to do it that way. And it's interesting. A few Alaska bloggers were there, progressive Alaska bloggers, and the press from two of the Anchorage television stations and a couple of other outlets, the Anchorage Daily News, were there basically covering us do that. And then we sort of held what turned out to be an impromptu press conference with Bill McAllister. And the press watched this as we asked questions that they had, and I thought that was fascinating.
Am I right, Phil, in my impression that Alaskans are becoming increasingly incensed at this outside interference in their own state activities, especially in relation to this investigation?
Actually, I think it peaked last week, and people are just sort of moving on. I think a lot of, even though Alaska is less affected by all this strange stuff happening in the between Wall Street, the rescue, bailout, whatever they want to call it, and so on, that's taken a lot of people's interest. Of course, the last few days, everybody's speculating on how this debate's going to go today. So it's a little bit less outrageous. People have been busy with a lot of other things and moving on. We did get this petition delivered, and we'll see. Also, today there was a hearing. I just got out of teaching a class. So I haven't been able to check to see how the hearing went on ruling on whether the Brent Flower investigation can be quashed by Republican legislators.
Well, it seems completely ridiculous. Here you had this bipartisan committee. As I recall, it had 8 Republicans and 4 Democrats that was issuing the subpoenas. It was approved by Republican leaders right up the chain, and yet 5 Republicans are coming in to claim that this is a biased partisan investigation. It's absurd on its face.
Well, we've seen a lot of absurdities in politics before. Ted Stevens and Ben Young are pulling even with Mark Begich and Ethan Berkowitz, respectively, in the polls. So, I mean, we're used to ridiculous situations, for sure.
Phil, do you think that's legit? I mean, is it possible the polls could be skewed in order to make Stevens look more strongly supported? I mean, that seems to me, that verges on incredulity.
The only poll I've seen fairly recently was one done by a pollster, Ivan Moore, who usually skews towards the people who pay him for the poll or towards Democrats, and he's showing Don Young within margin of error of Ethan Berkowitz right now, and so I'd be very concerned because his polls usually favor the Democrats a little bit.
Rather strange. What are the latest developments in relation to Sarah Palin that you might be able to sketch for us? I have here the latest National Enquirer, which has gone into considerable depth with an affair she's had with a fellow named Brad Hansen, who used to be her husband's business partner.
I don't think that's going to have a lot of traction. I think, the three main things that are out there are, of course, this branch plot investigation and the details, which will emerge probably on the 10th, unless they're able to quash it.
This is what we refer to as Troopergate.
That's right. The Branch Potter investigation is into Troopergate, and it's done by one of the most respected retired prosecutors in the state. And again, it was a 12-0 vote by the Legislative Council that set up this authority. And since the nomination, they sort of, the Republicans on that are backpedaling. But there's a lot of things that are coming out on that that are interesting. Also, the increasing amount of information coming in about her religious beliefs that make people uncomfortable. Her anti-science stance ties into this, and her very strong anti-women's choice stances over the years.
This dominion theology.
And the dominion theology, and she's been careful, and the people handling her on behalf of McCain have been very, very careful to basically not answer any questions about that, and to downplay any information that's coming out. But the thing that seems to have the most resonance with women, Joe, is tying that together with her anti-women stances, particularly the rape kit story from back in 2000 that's reemerged.
Yeah.
And along with her statements, her poor performance in the media, things that have happened since you and I have talked last, the image that she's portraying to independent women is not flattering at all towards Governor Palin.
No, that's certainly true. And of course, when you consider that she really favors abstinence education and then it's an utter failure in her own home, that seems to me rather striking counter indication that she's on the wrong track.
Yeah. And something that's really fascinating, it comes from the realm of unintended consequences, I guess you could say, but in this case, very positive development, is a local blogger and a media personality named Shannon Moore wrote an essay. I had asked for it, and then she put it up on our blog. I put it up on my blog, and people copied it onto other blogs about 2 weeks ago, called Life Begins at Rape. And it was about the Palin's policies over the years and her stances on birth control, the morning after pill, and the rape kits. And one of the blogs that picked this up, I believe it was a writer named Lindsay Bearstein for Fire Dog Lake, picked up this story and decided to ask people to start making donations in Sarah Palin's name to Planned Parenthood. And yesterday, the amount of donations made in Sarah Palin's name because of Lindsay's appeal based on Shannon Moore's essay surpassed $800,000.
And that's, of course, to undermine Palin policies or to institute more adequate policies than those she recommends.
Not only that, but to stuff her mailbox full of thank you letters from Planned Parenthood. And the Anchorage office itself has gotten over $4,000 in donations in the past 2 weeks as a result of Shannon's essay. And we're hoping Shannon and I and some women's advocacy groups here in Anchorage are hoping to hold a press conference when it reaches $1 million, which may happen tomorrow.
That's terrific.
Yeah, and I posted an essay on this morning or last night. And if your readers are concerned how to get old Planned Parenthood, how they can donate, they can link to my story on that last night.
Phil, let's pick it up there when we come back. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, Phil Munger.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Spencer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest, I'm happy to say, is Phil Munger, who is the editor of Progressive Alaska Blog, and who knows quite a lot about Governor Palin and politics in Alaska. Phil, you were mentioning where we could go to your website to pick up additional stuff you have there.
Yeah, I was basically explaining that I put up a blog where, or I put up a post yesterday where people could link to a way to donate to Planned Parenthood in Sarah Palin's name in protest to her requiring sexual assault victims to pay for their own forensic exams. Basically, also, the post was yesterday and it's called Chapter 91. Actually, I didn't. This will just appended to post that Lindsay Bayerstein wrote yesterday for the national blog Fire Dog Lake. So if you go to Paradise Lost, Chapter 100, down at the bottom, there's a link to where you can donate to Planned Parenthood. And like I say, they've passed $800,000. We're hoping to reach $1 million by the weekend.
That's fantastic. Paradise Lost, Chapter 100?
Yeah. At progressivealaska.blogspot.com.
Yeah. Tell me, you were summarizing the three key issues you thought, one of which was Troopergate and not this affair that she apparently had with this fellow Brad Hansen. The other two, Phil, just to review?
The
rape kit issue, right.
And what her, I guess you could say the death and of her evangelical beliefs really means to her, the limitations that would be put on her ability to govern. I've been concerned over the longest period of time about her anti-science stance, particularly in terms of wanting creationism to be taught in science classes.
Oh, yes.
And are seeing, that not just by itself, or the rape kit requirements just by itself. It is part of a belief system that's as rigid as almost in some ways as the Taliban's.
Jesus was a Taliban. I love it, Bill.
The Saudis love politicians who think that it's rape victims' own fault that they were raped.
Yes, and the Saudis are the most regressive society in the world in relation to women's rights.
One of them, for sure. But basically, she may be a person that some women can justifiably be proud of on some levels, but when you tie in those religious beliefs and the ties that she's forged with these evangelical and fundamentalist groups that are eventually training an underground army to eventually take over the United States, it can be pretty scary. I've spent a lot of time this week talking with people, university professors, psychologists who have been following this for a long time, asking me questions about this. David Nywert, one of the experts Pacific Northwest on millennialists and their ties to right-wing religion, spent the weekend, the end of last week and the weekend, the beginning of this week with me doing research on Sarah. And of course, Max Blumenfeld's articles for Salon.com and Huffington Post have been distributed widely, where he went and investigated Sarah Palin's church undercover. So this is the work getting out, Joe.
That's good. Where has his article appeared yet, Phil? The article about the church, has that appeared yet?
Yeah, if you just Google Max Blumenthal, Sarah Palin, you'll see the articles. They've been covered several places. Another, I'm trying to remember the name of the other writer who's done some good service on this, Michelle Goldberg has also covered this. I believe she wrote for The Nation.
Okay.
And then Steve Brown, B-R-A-U-N, for the Los Angeles Times Washington Bureau has written on this. And a columnist for the Los Angeles Times, his last name's Lopez. I can't remember his first name right now. I don't have a link. wrote an article that includes a YouTube that he made up in Nome as he was trying to find a view of Russia. Also, in his column on this, wrote about Scarpino.
He's having trouble getting a view of Russia from Alaska.
Yeah. And but anyway, so, you know, the attention brought on this is of course, going to make... I guess... I don't know if the McCain campaign is explaining to Sarah Palin how she's become a drag on the campaign in terms of polling numbers.
Yeah.
But she must feel a tremendous weight on her shoulders knowing how poorly she's done in the Katie Couric interviews this past week going into this debate this evening.
Yes. In fact, they're starting to have an impact. I have brand new poll results that suggest that prior to viewing the interview with Katie Couric, that the respondents who thought she would help were 42, hurt 42, so it was even. Independents 38 to 45, more thought she would hurt, but after the interview, the help dropped to 39 and the hurt to up to 46, and among independents dropped from 38 helpful to 34, and from hurt 45 up to 48, plus 38% of conservatives say she lacks the experience to be vice president.
I don't think there's a time in recent history when a Democratic Party challenger was at 50 points against a Republican candidate this early in October. And some polls, daily tracking polls, show Obama up by 11 right now.
Yeah, it's impressive, isn't it? Truly fascinating. What do you think we should look for in this debate? You know her fairly well. I gather she has some techniques she likes to use of turning questions on those who are asking them.
Well, I don't know. Biden is I'm not a big fan of Joe Biden, but he's certainly a skilled debater, a skilled negotiator. I think if he can go there treating her very courteously and pointing out that this is something women can be proud of for reasons not directly connected with that candidate herself, and without looking like he's overly flattering her or just shying it on, and just keep his answers short, it's a done deal. I don't think she responds well to the level of pressure that she's under.
Phil, I want to thank you for coming back on the show again. I know you're busy today, so I just want to say keep up the great work.
Thanks so much, Joe. Good pleasure talking.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. I'm looking at these poll results that I had mentioned to Phil Munger during our brief conversation, and this new study really is based on the interview with John McCain and Sarah Palin on CBS with Katie Couric, which I think was hastily arranged to try to improve impressions from a Katie Couric interview so they wouldn't, most viewers might confuse the two and not know how to discriminate. But in any case, this was a study after that joint interview that suggested that in relation to all responders that Palin would help 42%, hurt 42%, change, and independents helped 38%, hurt 45%, change to from all respondents helped 39%, that's a drop of 3%, hurt 46%. That's an increase of 4%. And among independents, who, of course, are crucial here, Help, 34. That's a 4% drop. Hurt, 48%. That's a 3% increase. And as I also mentioned, it's being reported today on MSNBC, for example, that 38% of conservatives say that she lacks the experience to be vice president. Now, if you want reinforcement, you can look at what the comedians are doing with this situation, where, comedy, even satire, to be successful is rooted in truth. Here is a sample of what the comedians have been saying about Sarah Palin. Bill Maher: "Are you kidding me? The mayor of Wasilla, Alaska? Yeah, that's who you want in the White House during a time of crisis. When she got a phone call at 3 in the morning, it was because a moose had gotten in the garbage can." Conan O'Brien: "Speaking of Sarah Palin, she said she's a lifelong member of the National Rifle Association, which may explain why she's in favor of shotgun weddings." Jay Leno: "They asked her if she would be able to explain how she once lobbied Washington for earmarks, and she said, 'We'll cross that bridge to nowhere when we come to it.'" That's funny even just reading it. Jay Leno again: "Palin and McCain are a good pair. She's pro-life and he's clinging to life." Jay Leno again: "Actually, it was kind of a smart choice. McCain went with a woman because he didn't want to have to be in a position to have to get CPR from Mitt Romney." Jay Leno again: "Today, President Bush called Governor Palin and congratulated her. Bush told Palin, 'The job of vice president is very important because as vice president, you get to tell the president what to do.'" Mike Ball: "What's the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? A pit bull would make a better vice president." Jimmy Kimmel: "Not only is she young, they're saying she's the prettiest candidate for vice president since John Edwards." Jimmy Kimmel: "I see they're selling Sarah Palin action figures. Sad incident at Toys R Us today. A Sarah Palin doll shot My Little Pony." Jay Leno: "For some reason, the Secret Service revealed that Sarah Palin's Secret Service code name is Denali. Turns out Denali is an old Eskimo name that means Dan Quayle." Jay Leno: "Turns out Governor Palin is a lifelong member of the NRA and a longtime hunter. Another vice president who's a hunter. What could go wrong there?" David Letterman: "The Palin family crisis has been solved now. The baby is being adopted by Angelina Jolie." Jay Leno: "Dick Cheney told reporters this week that there's no reason why Sarah Palin cannot be a successful vice president in the McCain administration. In fact, not only can she shoot a lawyer in the face, she can field dress him." Jay Leno: "Democrats are sending an army of lawyers and investigators up to Alaska to look into Palin's background." And, of course, John McCain is furious. He said, "Hey, if I didn't look into her background, there's no reason you should be looking into her background." David Letterman: "Reporters asked Sarah Palin if she could ever be president commander-in-chief, and she said, 'Yeah, sure, you betcha.'" Conan O'Brien: "Since Sarah Palin became the vice presidential nominee, there's been an actual spike in the sales of her style of eyeglasses. Gone way up. Yeah, with Palin's glasses, you'll be able to see everything except what the hell your teenage daughter's up to." Jay Leno: "I gotta admit, Palin, the governor of Alaska, looked very comfortable at the podium. 'Cause it's kind of like Alaska. You look out on that Republican convention floor, nothing but white as far as the eye can see." Bill Maher: "Republican presidential nominee John McCain has been running this campaign based on, 'We're at war and it's a dangerous world out there. I, John McCain, am the only one standing between the bloodthirsty Al-Qaeda and you. But if I die, this stewardess can handle it.'" Conan O'Brien said, "Vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin has many views. She says she's opposed to same-sex marriage. Did you know that?" "Yeah," Palin says. "Everyone knows marriage isn't for gay people. It's for pregnant teenagers." Then Jay Leno weighed in with, "Well, it's a very strange political campaign. I mean, out on the campaign trail, John McCain and Sarah Palin are talking about how they stood up to the Republican Party, they fought the Republican establishment, and they battled Republicans. Their message? Vote Republican. Sarah Palin has been getting briefed on what she needs to know to be John McCain's vice president. The first thing they taught her was CPR. Sad but true. My suspicion, by the way, is that the Republicans are going to cheat. They've cheated before. Many of you may not know that after Ronald Reagan's disastrous first debate with Jimmy Carter, William Casey, whom he would his campaign manager and whom he would subsequently appoint to be the director of the CIA, purloined a copy of Carter's briefing book, which enabled Reagan to have a script. Now, to draw a parallel here with Gwen Ifill, I would not be surprised if they had been able to make copies or put a spyware system on her computer so they could copy every stroke of her keyboard so they know exactly what questions are going to be asked. How many of you realize when George Walker Bush, our present president, debated Al Gore that he was wearing a receiver that you could actually see on the back of his jacket? I shouted out when I was watching this in a large theater, and I cannot believe that the press didn't make a major issue of it. So I suggest Palin's women's clothing offers many opportunities for concealing hearing devices, receivers in her ear. They wouldn't have to be prominent on her back. I'm sure they can be shaped now more successfully than they could be shaped then. I just say there are many risks here. When Jim Lehrer was conducting moderating with George Bush and Al Gore, I don't know if anyone else noticed, but he was alternating questions. Except when he came to the crucial question about foreign policy, he went from first question to Gore to, in this instance, first question to Gore again. I noticed it right away. And he asked, you know, what would your policy be toward A, B, C, D, E, F, G, rattling off six or eight countries? And Al Gore explained his policy to the six and eight countries. And therefore, when Bush was, you know, his opportunity to respond, he just said, agree, 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 agree. It was a cheap stunt, but the American people didn't notice, the press didn't report it, and they got away with it. Let that not happen again. Stand by. We'll be right back. Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. On the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. I just say that we're talking about this candidate for this nominee for vice president, especially because the odds are overwhelming that if by some stroke, including the theft of the election using electronic voting machines, they're party were to be elected into office, the odds seem to be enormous that she would accede to the presidency. And what we have here is a case of a surprise candidate who has sprung on the American people at the last moment, who's been kept very much under wraps by the McCain campaign. They haven't allowed her to have interviews. I mean, if and the ones that she has had have been semi-disastrous. I mean, Joe Biden has had something like 138 interviews since he was nominated, and Sarah Palin has had maybe three or four, including this latest one with McCain holding her hand. So I think it's incumbent upon us to learn as much as possible about them, because I have access to people like Shannon Moore and Phil Munger. It seemed to me important to exploit those opportunities. He mentioned now two articles, of which I was unaware until now, one by Max Blumenthal, talking about the witch hunter appoint Sarah Palin is the title, and the other by Shannon Moore, and Life Begins at Rape. And I think these are really quite crucial to understanding who this person that might become our president should be. So I want to go through them with you. This is the piece by Max Blumenthal. On September 20th and 21st, I attended services at the church Sarah Palin belonged to since she was an adolescent, the Wasilla Assembly of God. Although Palin officially left the church in 2002, she is listed on its website as a friend and spoke there as recently as June 8th of this year. I went specifically to see a pastor visiting from Kiambu, Kenya, named Thomas Muthi. Muthi gained fame within Pentecostal circles by claiming that he defeated a local witch, Mama Jane, in a great spiritual battle, thus liberating his town from sin and opening his people to the Spirit of Jesus. Muthi's mounting stardom took him to Wasilla Assembly of God in May 2005, where he prayed over Palin and called upon Jesus to propel her into the governor's mansion and beyond. Muthi was also implored Jesus to protect Palin from, quote, the spirit of witchcraft. The video archive of that startling sermon was scrubbed from Wasilla Assembly of God's website, but now it has reappeared. It's on YouTube, and you can find it. In fact, now, if you want to find this article, just, you know, scan in "The Witch Hunter Anoints Sarah Palin." Since Palin was nominated as vice president, Wasilla Assembly of God has taken a draconian line with reporters. The church now forbids members of the media from filming, taking notes, or bringing voice recorders to its services. I was able to record Muthi's recent sermons only by deploying an array of tiny cameras and hidden microphones, though the quality and comprehensiveness of my footage was severely compromised by the church's closed-door policy to the press. I was not going to be deterred. By the end of the second day of Muthi's sermons, the church had been tipped off about me, the liberal media member in its midst. An associate pastor told me he had received an email from an anonymous source warning him about me. When I tried to interview members of the congregation in the church parking lot, my questions were either met with silence or open hostility. I strongly suspect the McCain campaign has mobilized the Wasilla Assembly of God against perceived threats from the media. Let me just say as an aside, why should they be threatened? Why should learning things about this candidate they sprung on us at the last minute, of whom the world had virtually never heard, be something they have to contain? Unless there's something really important that we deserve to know that they don't want us to know because they're afraid it's going to adversely affect the vote, the outcome of the election. I mean, this is a disgrace. Concealing evidence, information about this woman who might become president. What an irresponsible act it was to nominate her in the first place. Continuing, but they hardly needed encouragement. On the first night of services, Muthi implored his audience to wage spiritual warfare against the enemy. As I filmed, a nervous church staffer approached from behind and told me to put my camera away. I acceded to his demands, but as Muthi urged the church to crush the python spirit of the unbeliever enemies by stomping on their necks, I pulled out a smaller camera and filmed from a more discreet position. Now church members were in deep prayer, speaking in tongues and raising their hands. Muthi exclaimed, "We come against the spirit of witchcraft. We come against the python spirits." Then a local pastor took the mic from Muthi and added, "We stomp on the heads of the enemy." Behind the Christian right's enthusiasm for Palin's conservative credentials is a visceral sense that she has come from them, not of them. Some right-wing evangelicals even believe she has messianic potential. As former Christian Broadcasting Network Vice President Jim Bramlett wrote, "Sarah is that standard God has raised to stop the flood. She has the anointing." My goodness. The Christian rights analysis is accurate to a certain degree. While Palin may not be the one, she is certainly one of them. Her social policy views, from her rejection of scientific evidence on global warming to her opposition to publicly funding emergency contraception for rape victims, are explicitly influenced by the sectarian theology she has subscribed to since she was a teenager. There's more, no better evidence of the depth of Palin's radical convictions than her startling encounter with a witch hunter, Bishop Mulphy. And he's going to continue his research. And I just say, listen, this might be our president. I suspect George Bush has deeply held very extreme religious views, too. The kind of views that may entertain an apocalyptic vision that the final war, the war to end all wars, would be fought in the Middle East, and that he's perfectly willing to see it take place, and that this has been a partial motivation for his interest in attacking Iraq and in not resolving or taking any step to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian problem, which is, of course, chronic, where the American, the enormous bias of the American attitude toward in favor of Israel and against the Palestinians has warped our standing in the eyes of the world. We are viewed as an unjust player. Well, here, now, if you want to know about family values, life begins at rape. Just ask Mayor Palin. This is, if anything, I think even more stunning. I'll begin now and continue it after the break. Can you imagine having to pay for the CSI, crime scene investigation, fingerprint photography, etc., if your home was robbed? What if a bill came for the breathalyzer test if you'd been hit by a drunk driver? When Sarah Palin was mayor, the city of Wasilla had the most egregious policy against victims of rape in the state of Alaska, possibly in the entire country. The rape kit, the set of items used by medical personnel for gathering and preserving physical evidence following a sexual assault, was charged to the victim. I sat with a rape victim during the harvesting of evidence. Mascara-smeared eyes stared blankly out from a cave of shame. "We've got swimmers," announced the forensic tech in the lab next door. My friend didn't look surprised. In her 60s, she was still asked if she felt the need for emergency contraception. Surviving the process would have only been compounded and made worse with an itemized bill, victimized twice, courtesy of Sarah Palin and the city of Wasilla. Much can be learned about the Palin administration's family values from reviewing their spending priorities. Former Chief of Police Iris Stambaugh included forensic rape kits up to $1,200 per kit in his budget requests, but he was fired by Palin in 1997. In her termination letter, Palin wrote, "I do not feel I have your full support in my efforts to govern the city of Wasilla. Therefore, I intend to terminate your employment." Stand by. Think about this. Think about this. This woman might be in the position to become president of the United States. Be right back. Jim Sepfer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kev and Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. I'm spending this show today, after my interview with Phil Munger, talking about Sarah Palin at this point. Then I want to turn to some new information we have available about John McCain, and I hope to have time finally to say a few words about the so-called bailout, which seems to me to be a massive ripoff of the American taxpayer. But bear in mind, if this woman is fundamentally morally corrupt, and I'm going to suggest as much, like her running mate John McCain, and let you have no doubt about where I stand on John McCain, just Google a piece, John McCain, : morally, mentally, and emotionally unfit. I'm telling you, this woman's attitude toward other women is a disgrace. She's so disrespectful that she won't even acknowledge another woman's right to make her own decision about these matters, these most personal, private matters about reproduction. And she won't even provide another woman the courtesy of being given or treated respectfully if she's subjected to the torment of a rape. And we're talking about a state that has the highest incidence of rape and incest in the United States. Probably, therefore, I would infer, in the world. Let me continue. So she has this chief of police fired because he wants to include rape kits in the budget for the city. Stombaugh headed the police department since it was created in 1993. And let me remind you, this is Shannon Moore. Shannon Moore runs a talk show, has a talk show. It's a liberal talk show in Alaska. But I'll tell you, I have listened to her. I've had her on the show. This is about as reasonable a person as you'll ever encounter, okay? She's not out to get Sarah Palin. She's a very, it seems to me, a very honest, open person. Here's what she says to continue. Stombaugh headed the police department since it was created in 1993. Before that, he served 22 years with the Anchorage Police Department, rising to the rank of captain. Sarah Palin hired Charles Fannin as the new Wasilla chief of police and said it was one of her best decisions as mayor. Palin eliminated the forensic rape kits from the budget. Although the number of rapes wasn't reported, Palin claimed it would save Wasilla taxpayers $5,000 to $14,000 a year. Well, if they're 1,200, I suppose that means they're like four to maybe ten rapes a year or something like that, okay. When Eric Croft, a Democratic legislator from Anchorage, learned of Wasilla's policy, he drafted House Bill 270, which Governor Tony Knowles signed into law. The new law made it illegal for any law enforcement agency to bill victims or victims' insurance companies for the cost of examinations to collect evidence of a sexual assault or determine if a sexual assault actually occurred. Upon signing the law, Governor Knowles said, quote, "We would just never bill the victim of a burglary for the cost of gathering evidence, nor should we bill rape victims just because the crime scene happens to be their bodies." Wasilla Police Chief Fannin protested the new law, saying it would require the city and communities to come up with more funds to cover the cost of the forensic exams. Really? Are the true costs of sexual assault and forcible rape in a community only measured and reflected in the dollars spent on the forensic rape kit? Let me mention as an aside, this is part and parcel of the Republicans' long-term plan to exclude human values from calculations of policies, public policies, by suggesting they always have to be subjected to a cost-benefit analysis in terms of dollars and cents. That excludes the importance of policies for preserving human dignity, the quality of life, human values, morality, and equity among persons. That's all that are excluded if you reduce them all to dollars and cents. Only all the values that make us human. Continuing. Alaska has the nation's highest per capita rate of forcible rape. A disproportionate number of rape and sexual assault victims are Native Alaskan women. Alaska Native people in Anchorage were 9.7 times more likely to be sexually assaulted than others living in the city between 2000 and 2003. Alaska crime statistics never seem to make a northern exposure episode, but this isn't about statistics. Real lives were affected by Palin's regressive policies. One thing Alaska can't seem to export is the fundamental information around a woman's rights. Alaska liberalized abortion law before Roe v. Wade. Our dirty secret had to do with a woman's right to be safe from rapists. The right to choose was not only threatened but abolished with Sarah Palin's archaic policy as mayor of Wasilla. The rape kit included emergency contraception. To be sure, emergency contraception is not, nor does it cause an abortion. In fact, it prevents pregnancy and therefore reduces abortion. My suspicion, by the way, therefore, would be that this is the principal reason she wanted to exclude it. Continuing, under Palin administration's life begins at rape for women unable to pay for their forensic evidence gathering. Justice is served to women who can afford it and denied to those who can't. I live in Alaska, the wealthiest of the 50 states. Forcing rape victims to pay for their own forensic rape kits is something one would expect to find in a fundamentalist country overseas. I have outrage fatigue. I can't decide which facet of this policy is more upsetting. Is it the denial of justice for the poor? Is it the punishment of women who had been raped? Is it the political policies of a woman so entrenched in the pro-life movement that she would deny justice to a victim? This is not a pro-life policy. It is a pro-rapist policy and forced pregnancy policy. It should be noted that Joe Biden introduced legislation to fund rape kits to women in America. John McCain voted against it. when Sarah Palin was elected Alaska's first female governor, I hope these issues would be addressed as part of her historic reform. When Amnesty International published her study on rape statistics in Alaskan women, the response was pathetic. The now dismissed Commissioner of Public Safety, Walt Monaghan, acknowledged the lack of law enforcement in Alaska as part of the problem. Since that time, Walt Monaghan has been fired and $2.5 million threatened from the budget for state troopers. John Sear, C-Y-R, is executive director of the Public Safety Employees Association and has been very critical of the Palin administration's commitment to keep Alaskans safer. Under the Palin administration, a law was passed that specifically deals with rapists. I'm not making this up. It is now illegal for Alaskans to buy or sell the rapist number one doll. Oh, you haven't heard of it? It's an action figure from Quentin Tarantino's film Grindhouse. Yes, really. So now if you're raped, you can take comfort in knowing Alaska outlawed an action figure. For all the Alaskans who have taken the charge to protect fellow citizens from predators, this was a giant waste of time. It's embarrassing to write this. Who the hell has been prosecuted for this outrageous purchase? Did she think people of Alaska with a propensity to rape were suddenly dissuaded because they couldn't buy a movie action figure? If Alaska's sexual assault statistics were true for the rest of the country, rape would be considered an epidemic, and the National Guard would be called up. As Mayor and Governor Sarah Palin has made justice elusive to criminals, and forensics a commodity that victims must purchase. Meanwhile, rape prevention sits on the back burner. Being a rape victim isn't necessary for outrage. You don't need ovaries to protect the physical sanctity of fellow citizens. Life does not begin at rape. It just gets harder. And in a note, she adds that as Mayor, Sarah Palin spent $50,000 on remodeling her city mayor's kit, which would have been at least 4 years' worth of funding the rape kits needed in her city. Let me tell you that the essence of morality is treating other persons with respect. If you are subjected to an abuse, if you are subjected to a mugging, if you were subjected to a burglary, if you were subjected to a rape, would you expect treatment like this? I'm asking you, is this fair and equitable? Is it even moral? Let me assure you, this is a gross example of immorality. It's undemocratic, un-American, and it should be condemned. Jim Fetzer, your host, will be right back.
The GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Living is easy with eyes closed. Misunderstanding all you see. It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out. It doesn't matter much to me. Take you down, 'cause I'm going to strawberry fields. Nothing is real, nothing to get hung about. Strawberry fields forever.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays. And I'm here the rest of the week. I have a fascinating story to tell you about John McCain. There's a letter written by a woman identified as Anasuya Dubey, A-N-A-S-U-Y-A-D-U-B-E-Y, who is a clinical psychologist in California who had a vacation in the Fugees with John McCain and Cindy, and this is really quite stunning. What she had to say about it. It's become very controversial. A lot of persons have disputed whether there's really such a person as authored this or whether it's legit. And I want to tell you where you can go. I'm going to read a number of comments, and they're now over 100, I suspect, including. Over 100, and I'll read a variety of them that convince me that this is perfectly on the up and up. But when it comes to, again, family values, morals, what it means to be an American, what it means to be a human being, I want you to read this. It was just before John McCain's last run at the presidential nomination in 2000 that my husband and I vacationed in Turtle Island in Fiji with John McCain, Cindy, and their children, including Bridget, their adopted Bangladesh child. It was not our intention, but it was our misfortune to be in close quarters with John McCain for almost a week, since Turtle Island has a small number of bungalows and their focus on commercial meals forces all vacationers who are there at the same time to get to know each other intimately. He arrived at our first group meal and started reading quotes from a pile of William Faulkner books with a forest of Post-its sticking out of them. As an English literature major myself, my first thought was, if he likes this so much, why hasn't he memorized any of this yet? I soon realized that McCain actually thought we had come on vacation to be a volunteer audience for his readings, which then became a regular part of each meal. Out of politeness, none of the vacationers initially protested at this intrusion into their blissful holiday, but people's buttons definitely got pushed as the readings continued day after day. Unfortunately, this was not his only contribution to our mealtime entertainment. He waxed on during one meal about how Indochine women had the best figures and that our American corn-fed women just couldn't meet up to this standard. He also made it a point that all of us should stop Cindy from having dessert as her weight was too high. And he made a few comments to Amy, the 25-year-old wife of the honeymooning couple from Nebraska, that she should eat less as she needed to lose weight. McCain's appreciation of the beauty of Asian women was so great that David, the American economist, had to move his Thai wife to the other side of the table from McCain as McCain kept aggressively flirting with and touching her. Needless to say, I was irritated at his large ego and his rude behavior toward his wife and other women, but decided he must have some redeeming qualities as he had adopted a handicapped child from Bangladesh. I asked him about this one day, and his response was shocking. Oh, that was Cindy's idea. I didn't have anything to do with it. She just went and adopted this thing without even asking me. You can't imagine how people stare when I wheel this ugly black thing around in a shopping cart in Arizona. No, it wasn't my idea at all. I actively avoided McCain after that, but unfortunately one day he engaged me in a political discussion, which soon got us on the topic of the active U.S. bombing of Iraq at that time. I was shocked when he said, if I was in charge, I would nuke Iraq to teach them a lesson. Given McCain's personal experience with the horrors of war, I had expected a more balanced point of view. I commented on the tragic consequences of the nuclear attacks on Japan during World War II. But no, he was not to be dissuaded. He went on to say that if it was up to him, he would have dropped many more nuclear bombs on Japan. I rapidly extricated myself from this conversation as I could tell that his experience being tortured as a POW didn't seem to have mellowed out his perspective, but rather it made him more aggressive and vengeful toward the world. My final encounter with McCain was on the morning that he was leaving Turtle Island. Amy and I were happily eating pancakes when McCain arrived and told Amy that she shouldn't be having pancakes because she needed to lose weight. Amy burst into tears at this abusive comment. I felt fiercely protective of Amy and immediately turned to McCain and told her to leave her alone. He became very angry and abusive toward me and said, "Don't you know who I am?" And I looked him in the face and said, "Yes, you are the biggest asshole I have ever met," and headed back to my cabin. I'm happy to say that later that day when I arrived at lunch, I was given a standing ovation by all the guests for having stood up to McCain's bullying. Although I have shared my McCain story informally with friends, this is the first time I am making this public. I almost did so in 2000 when McCain first announced his bid for the Republican nomination, but it soon became apparent that George Bush was a shoo-in candidate, and so I did not act then. However, now that there's a very real possibility that McCain could be elected as our next president, I feel it is my duty as an American citizen to share this story. I can't imagine a more scary outcome for America than that this abusive, aggressive man should lead our nation. I have observed him in intimate surroundings as he really is, not how the media portrays him to be. If his attitudes toward women and his treatment of his own family are even a small indicator of his real personality, then I shudder to think what will happen to America were he to be elected as our president. Now, if you want to find this and look at this and some of the comments that I'm going to quote, go to My Holiday with McCain, Telling Thoughts. My Holiday with McCain, Telling Thoughts, Google. And I say, boy, is this dramatic confirmation of the inferences I've drawn about this man that are in my column entitled John McCain, Morally, Mentally, and Emotionally Unfit, where I explain that he is abusive of women and uses them, including his own wife, where he is reckless and irresponsible in making decisions, and where his health, his mental health, has to be open to question given the extent to which his campaign has gone to conceal his records, that this man would be and his complete and utter detachment from reality, complete and utter detachment of reality. We can't afford another president who has traits like this, which, alas, I think we also find in our current president. As Barack Obama has observed, after 8 years, we can't afford four more. John McCain appears to be precisely the person I have taken him to be, and I think that the American people deserve to know. As I said, there have been many comments then made here, including over 100, and I'm going to review some of them when we return from our break. Can you imagine anything more important than knowing the moral values that actually underlie a human personality and their character? Character is important. It's fundamental. And here's a man who is appallingly lacking in moral values. Jim Fetzer, your host. I'll be right back. On the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. The story I just read you, the report, the narrative I just read you, has been disputed on many grounds. If you go to my Holiday with John McCain, telling thoughts on Google, you'll find over 100 posts commenting on it. I'm going to read from some of them, which have convinced me that it's authentic, as well as, of course, that in the context of my own understanding of John McCain, it fits perfectly. Here's one. This is number 12. This story is not a hoax. As I come across blogs questioning the veracity of this account, I submit the entry that follows. So apologies if you read this again. I have known Anna, the author, for 13 years, and I know her to be intelligent, principled, and unfailingly honest. She shared her Turtle Island experience with me immediately after it happened. The details of her account are disconcerting, and I fully recognize that they are difficult to believe. However, I trust that her account is truthful and considered. I believe her. I know that she is fully aware of the maelstrom that this will cause and the attention that is coming her way, and she is brave for her willingness to share her story and disclose her name. Would you do the same? Number 36. I'm totally not into politics, and I believe all candidates are devious and actors to some extent. That being said, I received a letter from a distant cousin who heard Anna tell the account of the Fuji Island vacation 2 years ago. She was given the letter recently and can vouch that she knows Anna told her the same story 2 years ago. She gave me permission to copy and send you her paragraph that she sent to her relatives when she forwarded it. Here it is, from Lucy Sperlin. I don't forward political stories usually, but I have first-hand knowledge of this one. It is written by an Indian woman named Anna who lives in San Francisco. She has been a good friend of my niece since childhood. Anna's dad is an Indian diplomat, once ambassador to Peru. Brenda is Anna's mom, a good friend of my sister, who is married to an Indian and lives in Delhi. So Anna is world-traveled and very well-educated. I was visiting my niece, a doctor at Santa Clara Valley Hospital, one time a couple of years ago, and Anna and her husband came to visit. And I heard this story directly from her at that time. I had thought of it many times recently, wishing I could remember the details better. Then here, lo and behold, my brother-in-law has sent it to me in writing. So it is absolutely legitimate and real. The story speaks for itself. Number 37. Thanks to Lois for putting me onto this blog site, which I had not seen prior to forwarding Anna's story to some friends, one of whom was my second cousin, who is Lois's dad, who forwarded it to her. I'm amazed at the buzz about this story, which was indeed written by Anna Doobie. I understand the skepticism. Of course, if you don't know what I'd do, you'd be skeptical. But rather than repeat what I said that Lois forwarded to you, I'll just say that it is real, Anna is real, and I was one of those people she told the story to in the last few years. I was visiting my niece in the San Francisco Bay Area. Anna and her husband came to visit one evening. At that time, it just seemed to be an icky story of an egotistical and unpleasant politician from another state exhibiting a tendency toward psychological abuse that makes one cringe at a real-life portrayal of the ugly American. But in recent months, it has kept coming back to my mind. I didn't know Anna had put it in writing until my brother-in-law sent the written account to me a couple of days ago. The foreword included a note from Anna's mother, who sent it to him. She has been a longtime friend of him and my sister. Number 40. I think we can verify McCain's admiration for William Faulkner by his 1992 Houston convention speech, quote, this is now McCain speaking, there's a quote by the great writer William Faulkner which I have always admired. I decline to accept the end of man, he wrote. I believe that man will not merely endure, he will prevail. He is immortal, not because he alone among creatures has an inexhaustible voice, but because he has a soul of spirit capable of compassion and sacrifice and endurance. Today, on every continent, Faulkner's hopeful creed has been affirmed. Nearly a half a billion people have emerged from communism and authoritarianism into a new age of enlightenment. No nation has contributed more to the global success of liberty than America, and no president has served this noble cause with greater courage and wisdom than President George Bush. Number 71. It's been fascinating to watch these threads and the various assertions of what is absolutely true and false about Anna Suya. I know Anna moderately well. We speak every 6 months or so, though I haven't spoken with her since this whole holiday thing broke out. She told me the story back in 2000. When I was having a little misguided liberal love affair with McCain, and she was trying to dissuade me. What's fascinating is how certain everyone is about things having to do with Anna. They claim she doesn't exist, claim she wasn't at Turtle Island, claim McCain wasn't there, etc. Now, I wasn't there myself, but I do know that Anna exists, that she shared this vacation with McCain. I don't have any extraordinary to add, just that it's interesting to look at one of these viral things when you actually know the person in question. Number 77. This was reputedly sent by Mary Kay Gamble, professor of classics, comparative theater, and theater arts, who acknowledges forwarding a story attributed to Anna, but there's a late ad, and it's kind of odd here. I don't know quite what to make of that, so I'm going to skip that. Here's another one. This is getting into deeper issues. Number 4, it begins by saying, now we know who is the pig in this campaign, I guess with or without lipstick. This person observes, John McCain is one of only a few senators to earn a 0% lifetime rating from Planned Parenthood's Action Fund, and he only scored that high because the organization doesn't have a lower rating. Let's look at his record. He voted against requiring health care plans to cover birth control. He voted against comprehensive, medically accurate sex education. He voted against international family planning funding. He voted against funding to prevent teens and unintended pregnancies. He voted against public education for emergency contraception. And he voted against restoring Medicaid funding that could be used for family planning for low-income women. National Public Radio reported many Republican voters seem to believe incorrectly that the current Republican frontrunner, Arizona Senator John McCain, supports abortion rights. John McCain wants us to believe that he's a moderate who supports improving the health of women in the United States, but in fact, he's among the most extreme members of Congress who voted against common sense measures on family planning, sex education, and access to basic health care. number 24. It is hard to imagine this email as being an absolute true record of events, seeing as how humans tend to skew and warp events they witness no matter how many times it is retold. However, there are a few things that add up in this email about McCain. First, being a POW for as long as he was and in the manner in which he stayed a POW would suggest he has a chip on his shoulder, something to prove. Post-traumatic stress disorder is no joke. Very few soldiers adjust to regular life in society after hardship and war. So McCain's foreign policy is something to be feared, especially when he stated at the Republican convention he'll refuse to offer aid to any country that doesn't like us, a very vague statement, as if the world didn't hate us enough. Two, McCain is far from distinguished where it concerns physical attraction, yet he manages to go after thin, attractive women much younger than himself. So statements regarding his concerns about his wife's appearance are justified to some extent. Three, what McCain did with his ex-wife is horrible and is a situation well documented and verified. After a disfiguring accident, McCain divorced his wife and married Cindy, obviously because he didn't want to be tied down to a disfigured, ugly woman. He thought only of himself and discarded his wife when she was of no longer use to him. This act alone helps justify statements made about McCain's disdain for his adopted child. Perhaps it reminds him of how he was almost disfigured as a POW. In all honesty, if you go back and look at interviews with McCain, it's not hard to see the type of man he is. All too often, party devotion blinds people, and I mean that on both sides, to the truth. These people justify things in order to ensure the decision and faith in a person is correct. How many people in this world want to believe they voted a psychopath into office? No one, unless they were profiting by it. Stand by. We'll be right back. Jim Fetzer, your host.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the line of a dark black.
Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. I wish we had other things to discuss, but we're in the situation where this election is upon us, and if we don't make the right decision as a nation, we may suffer four more years of misery, incompetent judgment, irresponsible decision-making, lies, lies, lies. In fact, the entire McCain campaign is built on nothing but lies and deceit and deception. There was one more post here I wanted to read, number 98. This report appears to be consistent with my own observations about McCain, which I published in John McCain, Morally, Mentally, and Emotionally Unfit, Op-Ed News, September 5th, 2008. During the first debate, I remarked to my wife that McCain's apparent unwillingness to look at Obama, even after Jim Lehrer prompted them to address each other, suggested to me that he is not only a sexist who uses women, but a racist who has contempt for non-whites. Consider his other remarks about his willingness to have bombed Japan at the end of World War II and Iraq in the aftermath of the first Gulf War. My inference is that he suffers from a white superiority complex. Any way you cut it, this man is unfit to serve as President of the United States. And that, of course, was my post. Now, we just suffered through 4 years of a miserable presidency with a man who's a mentally incompetent and morally sadistic and utterly irresponsible. And we cannot, it is would be a travesty to allow that kind of conduct from an administration to continue to pervert the great legacy for which this nation stands and its great values embedded in the Constitution, which the present president described as just a goddamn piece of paper. Now, you got to understand, perhaps if you knew that W used to take firecrackers and blow up frogs when he was a young man, you would have a better fix on who he was. Or if you understood that as governor, he executed more prisoners than in any other state, and at a faster rate, and mocked those who pled for their lives, in particular a woman. He mocked her. This is a disgraceful. And we have to put up with something like this without knowing it. We have to get all the insights we can. Let me turn to the bailout, by the way, where Russell Feingold, a senator from Wisconsin, was among the 25 who voted against it. He says, this is a comment about it. "We've heard from many of you about the bailout bill in recent days, so we wanted to make sure everyone saw Russ's statement made before last night's Senate vote. Russ was one of 25 senators to vote against the package. Quote, I will oppose the Wall Street bailout plan because, though well-intentioned and certainly much improved over the administration's original proposal, it remains deeply flawed. It fails to offset the cost of the plan, leaving taxpayers to bear the burden of serious lapses of judgment by private financial institutions, their regulators, and the enablers in Washington who paved the way for this catastrophe by removing the safeguards that had protected consumers and the economy since the Great Depression. The bailout legislation also fails to reform the flawed regulatory structure that permitted this crisis to arise in the first place, and it doesn't do enough to address the root cause of the credit market collapse, namely the housing crisis. Taxpayers deserve a plan that puts their concerns ahead of those who got us into this mess," Senator Russ Feingold, October 1st. Now, on next Tuesday, when we return, I'm going to have, during the second hour, Timothy Canova, who's a professor at Chapman College of International Economic Law, on. Canova has some of the most intelligent remarks I've ever heard about this. Listen, for example, "I am unconvinced that this $700 billion bailout for Wall Street will have any lasting positive effect. If the goal is to help the credit markets, the Federal Reserve already has the authority to purchase commercial paper and support the money markets. The Bush administration is once again using fear to scare people into supporting a dangerous course. There are almost 10,000 foreclosures a day now, and between 1 and 2 million adjustable rate mortgages are due to adjust upward in the next year. Without help for the bottom of the pyramid, Wall Street will be back next year asking for another $1 trillion. This was Japan's quagmire in the 1990s. The decline in housing prices must be stopped in its tracks, and the sooner the better." I mean, you got to bear in mind, this is a tried and true strategy of the Bush administration. They say, for example, we just got to solve the problem now and not ask questions, not assign blame. But if you don't analyze how we got here, if we don't know the reasons that got us here, they may persist into the future, not be satisfied by the plan, and leave us worse off by $1 trillion. That's what I say is taking place here. This is a massive bailout to help the fat cats. It's intended to strangle, handicap the next administration, and it's going to be used as a political cannon fodder against the Democrats, although McCain appears to have blown that when he prematurely announced that the Democrats were responsible for this bailout when in the false belief that it had passed when it had not. There's another case of deceit and deception from John McCain. This is completely disgusting. This is a continuation of looting of the American Treasury. That's your money and my money. They're going to borrow that money. They're going to borrow $1 trillion from banks and give it to banks. How much sense does that make? And they're not going to solve the problem. As I explained yesterday, it seems to me a far more appropriate way to resolve this is to take what the money that it requires to pay off the difference between the value, assessed value of these homes when the mortgages were given and their present value. Just pay it off and set things right for the homeowners, benefit the American people. If they got into these situations, it was with the connivance of these banks, and I do not believe they ought to be penalized. At least we'd know we were benefiting our fellow citizens rather than making fat cats richer. Here's something else that Timothy Canova says. Obama is saying many of the right things, that we should be helping Main Street as well as Wall Street, and that we need to re-regulate Wall Street. But like many in Congress, he is also saying that these things can wait until next year, and that such measures do not need to be in the bailout package. However, now is the time when Wall Street is desperate for taxpayer help from Congress to demand real help from Main Street. I mean, once they got what they want, why should they have any inclination at all to be willing to accept regulations? They're going to fight them. They'll use our money to fight regulations that might have prevented the catastrophe that led to them asking for our money, which was completely wrong. Notice how the administration comes with one plan, a very narrowly conceived plan that puts one man responsible for dispensing nearly $1 trillion. Has such a stupefying event ever occurred in world history? Frankly, I doubt it. The plan should be completely different. Henry Paulson, remember, is a former director of Goldman Sachs. So what in God's name should he be doing where he can distribute money back to Goldman Sachs? This is part of the problem that got us in the mess in the first place. And remember, John McCain says he is fundamentally and at heart a deregulator. He was the head of the Commerce Committee for many years when a lot of this deregulation took place. His financial advisor, who would be likely to become Secretary of Treasury in a McCain administration, Phil Graham, is the biggest deregulator of them all. They set up this problem, and now they want the taxpayers to bail it out. I say enough is enough. Stop this. Defeat this legislation. Do not pass it. Take the time to rewrite it and get it right. Or they're going to be coming back hat in hand and trying to extort another $1 trillion from the American taxpayer, and there will be no end to it. Understand this point. They want to socialize risk. They want to leave us with all the risk while privatizing profit, while they take all the benefit. Mark my words, that's what's going on here. This is Jim Fetzer, your host. Thank you all for listening. But if you go carrying pictures of chairman